And welcome to another On the Hoof podcast from SRUC Veterinary Services. I am delighted to be chatting to my colleague Heather Stevenson, Veterinary Investigation Officer, and she will be chatting to me from Dumfries. Hello, Heather, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Alison.
So, what are we chatting about today, Heather?
We're going to look at sheep minerals and where the issues lie, if there's a deficiency, what can go wrong if they get too much of particular minerals leading to toxicity, and an overview of when you should be thinking about testing.
That sounds really interesting. So this podcast, although we say on the Hoof podcasts are for vets in practice, the way we're structuring it today, it's very relevant to farmers as well, isn't it, Heather?
That's right.
So, I mean, to kick off, in terms of the importance of minerals in sheep, So when do you have to start looking at this in relation to your flock?
It's something that should be on the radar probably at all times of year, but there are specific instances where a mineral deficiency would have bigger impacts on the productivity of the flock. For example, a selenium or an iodine deficiency in the run-up to topping time will have an impact on scanning percentages, could have an impact on top fertility. Lambs have a greater requirement than adult sheep as a whole for trace elements because they're still growing. So it's important with regards to lamb growth rates that particularly they are getting an adequate supply of cobalt and selenium. And the requirements can often increase round about weaning time and after weaning time.
Okay, so obviously lamb growth and lamb finishing is all about making profit, isn't it? So it's really important there. So tell me a little bit more about the weaning percentage for lambs and how minerals could impact that.
When you're looking at weaning percentages, you are really having to go back for often 10 or more months in the history of the flock, thinking about ewe body condition, thinking about whether the tops and ewes had adequate selenium status at that time. If the ewes are low in selenium, you can get an increased problem with early embryonic death. But obviously, the problem with a lot of these things is there are other potential causes that are not related to trace elements. So infection with toxoplasmosis, for example, for the first time, could also cause an increase in early embryonic death. Then there are so many potential impacts of trace elements when it comes to the lambing period. If lambs are short of selenium, they may struggle to stand, they may struggle to suckle. If they're short of copper, there's the potential that you could get sway back if the ewes have been deficient in copper from mid-pregnancy onwards. If the lambs are deficient in iodine, they are prone to hypothermia because they find it difficult to maintain their body temperature. They often have very poor fleeces. And ewes and lambs that are deficient in cobalt, that the maternal bond, they struggle to form that maternal bond as well, that the ewes' maternal mothering instincts might not be as good, the lambs might not be as active. So it can play a big, big role. And then going forwards, once the lambs are a little bit older, again, selenium deficiency, you could get sudden deaths due to white muscle disease if selenium status is not good enough. And a deficiency of cobalt, well, lambs that are deficient in cobalt often have high worm burdens, and it's a little bit chicken and egg as to which comes first. But if a worm infection is damaging their intestines, then they won't be absorbing vitamin B12 as well through the intestine as you, they should be. So they have a requirement for cobalt, but then that cobalt is converted to vitamin B12 by the microbes in the rumen. And that vitamin B12 is absorbed through the intestine and it's required for energy metabolism and wool growth. So if you're looking at a whole thing as a whole, then if there's an issue with cobalt, it's much more likely to flag up in the sheep, first of all, rather than the cattle.
That's fascinating. Thank you, Heather. So how do you actually test the flock to see whether your animals are short on minerals?
If we have animals that come in for post-mortem, for example, to investigate a sudden death or to investigate poor lamb growth rates and ill thrift, then in these animals we usually take a liver sample. But for routine monitoring or investigations on farm, then usually it's blood samples that are collected. Occasionally people take liver biopsies, but that's not that common in the UK.
So Heather, if you're worried about trace elements in a flock, how many sheep do you normally test?
When you're doing routine monitoring, you're looking to establish what the sort of average status is for the particular mineral you're looking at, for example, copper. And different groups of sheep will obviously be grazing in different areas of the farm, so the underlying soil types might be different. So one group of sheep is not necessarily representative of results from one group of sheep is not necessarily representative of all the sheep on the farm. So what we will get is people will send in blood samples, and in most cases we will get between 6 and 10 samples from any particular group of sheep at one point. And the important things to think about is if you're doing routine monitoring, you're looking for an average value. So you want to be sampling average animals and not picking out the ones that are not typical of the group, because they could skew your results. If you have a couple of particularly thin animals in a group of sheep that are otherwise in reasonable body condition and you're wanting to do routine monitoring, then don't sample those two thin sheep. You can investigate them for other problems separately. If you've got animals that are obviously showing clinical signs and you're concerned that those are due to a trace element deficiency, then if they're ill-thriven and live weight gains are poor, then obviously you want to be sampling the ones that you're concerned about. So you're sampling in that case to try and reach a diagnosis rather than as part of a routine monitoring as part of your flock health plan, for example.
That's some really useful advice, Heather. So when should a farmer test these animals for trace elements?
There are certain times of year where it's more useful than others. If you look at our diagnoses of cobalt deficiency and selenium deficiency, and if you plot those on a graph by month, there's a very, very clear peak for both of those trace elements, where we see a big increase in diagnoses in the sort of September, October, November period. So that is being driven by people collecting samples to investigate problems with ill thrift in lambs in the main. So given that peak there, and given that we know that the cobalt requirement particularly increases in lambs after weaning, and that the grass can be lower in cobalt at that time of year, then a good time to do some routine monitoring for lambs would be round about the weaning time. Obviously, people will know their own flock history and what's happened in the past. For other age groups, you want to be looking at trace element status of tups and ewes, probably a good 6 to 8 weeks before topping time so that you've got time to supplement if it's required, and also taking into account the length of time that it takes for sperm to be produced. Other times of year that it can be good to collect samples would be, say, at scanning time or perhaps pre-lambing when they're being handled anyway for clostridial vaccinations.
That's a good point. So, you know, once somebody tests or samples their animals, sends it off to the lab to be tested, in what form do the results come back? And just tell us a little bit about how you look at those results.
You'll get a numerical result. So for each animal sampled, the exception to that is iodine testing, which is expensive. So samples tend to be pooled together to give one overall result. But if we take copper as an example and you sample six animals, you'll get six individual results. And the other thing that will appear on the report is a reference range. The reference ranges are usually based on growth response trials, which will have been done in the past. But for routine monitoring in particular, we tend to calculate an average or a mean result for the animals that have been sampled. So you can compare that mean result to the reference range. We often also supply what's called the marginal band. And if the mean result lies within the marginal band, these are animals that might be at risk of developing disease due to trace element deficiency, but at the time of sampling are probably looking quite healthy. And the reason for that is there are different stages with trace elements in the body. If the diet is deficient in, for example, copper, then initially there won't be anything to see in the animals because the liver is a good store of copper. So even if the daily intake of copper is on the low side, the copper that's already stored in the liver will maintain the blood levels within the reference range. Once the body stores in the liver become a bit more depleted, that blood result, the mean blood result, might start to dip into the marginal band, but again, the animals may still look perfectly healthy. If the dietary intake of copper continues to be too low, then the body systems that the copper is required for, generally as part of enzymes, will start to fail. And you may start to see clinical signs. And at this point, your mean blood result will be within the marginal band. And finally, once the body stores are becoming very low, you will get into a disease state where the mean blood results will be below the marginal band, and you will also be seeing very obvious clinical signs. That might just present as ill thrift, and of course there are many other causes of that, so you have to tease out what's going on. And even if a trace element deficiency is confirmed, it might not be the only problem. It could be that there are other issues as well, such as parasitic gastroenteritis. So trace elements are important, but you've always got to look at the bigger picture as well.
Yes, that's fascinating. And obviously you say, you know, you've got to look at the bigger picture. But what other possible recommendations are there for a flock with deficiency in trace elements?
There are different means of supplementation, from drenches to injections to boluses to mineralised feed. And what's most appropriate will very much vary from flock to flock, group to group, farm to farm, and depending on the time of year. So there's lots of different things that need to be taken into account. The cost of supplementation, how long you want the supplementation to last for, how often it's likely the animals will be handled. So all these things will have a bearing on it. And of course, we need to remember as well that it's not always the case that giving more and more is a good thing, and we can sometimes run into issues with toxicity if too much copper, for example, is supplied.
So Heather, I mean, we're obviously discussing sheet minerals in general, and we've been talking about trace elements. I mean, what is a trace element?
The body contains a large number of different minerals, and there are ones that are known as the macrominerals, and they are present in the body in fairly large quantities. So that's including minerals like calcium, for example. And if you think of a 60 kilogram ewe, then these macrominerals are present at roughly the amount between the weight of a packet of crisps and a bag of sugar. When we're talking about trace elements, they're also known as microminerals. They're present in really quite small quantities. So this is the copper, the cobalt, the selenium. And for a 60 kilogram, you're looking at, well, the amount of gold in your smartphone, for example, or up to perhaps the weight of a sheet of paper. So for things that are there in tiny, tiny quantities, they can have a big impact on the production and the flock.
So just going back to taking samples from the vet's point of view, so what vacutainers should the vet use?
If you're doing a general trace element screen, then you should collect both a red top and a green top sample from each sheep that you're bleeding. For cobalt, we measure vitamin B12. For selenium, that gets measured as glutathione peroxidase, and the green top tube is required for that. Copper can be measured in either serum or in plasma.
Okay, thanks, Heather. If a farmer has a problem with lamb ill thrift, what would the vet be looking at in terms of the kind of questions to ask?
There'd be a whole raft of questions to ask there. When did it start? What age were they at the time? Which animals are affected? How many are affected? What are the adult sheep like, the cattle like on the farm? What have they been getting to eat? Have they been weaned? When were they weaned? Have they been monitoring live weight gains? Do they have a target live weight gain? And when did they start to stop meeting that target? Have they already been supplemented with minerals? Was there any response to that? And also taking into account other things, such as had there been any other problems with them that could impact on their growth rates, like lameness, or if they've had a worm issue and they've been treated with worms. And just generally what other signs they're seeing. So for cobalt, they might have watery eyes, poor fleece. They often have crusty ears because they've got a bit of photosensitization. They're probably be lacking in energy and a bit dull.
That's really interesting, Heather. And you mentioned cobalt. Let's focus on cobalt, and can you just tell me the importance and the use of cobalt in the animal?
The cobalt's converted into vitamin B12 by the microbes in the rumen, and the vitamin B12 is part of enzyme systems that are required for wool growth, but also for energy metabolism. In particular, the production of glucose. So while the lambs are sucking the ewes and they're on a predominantly milk diet, they have lower requirements for cobalt and vitamin B12 because it's fairly straightforward for them to get the glucose from the milk. But once they are becoming full ruminants, and particularly once they are weaned, that requirement for cobalt vitamin B12 increases because it's much harder to get glucose from a forage-based diet than from a milk-based diet.
Gosh, that's fascinating. So what about selenium? Because obviously we hear about selenium all the time, but what does it do?
Selenium has a role in protecting the cells in the body from the chemicals that are produced naturally by the metabolism within the cell. So selenium is particularly important in muscles in the body that are having to work hard. So that would be the big muscles of the skeleton, of the legs, and also the muscles of respiration for breathing, so the diaphragm, the intercostal muscles, and the heart obviously is itself a muscle that's having to work very hard and continuously. So when you have animals that are selenium deficient, you get a condition called white muscle disease. And when the selenium is deficient, you get damage to these muscles. And again, it can mimic other diseases and conditions. If the heart muscle is damaged, then you may just get a sudden death. If the breathing muscles are struggling because of selenium deficiency, the muscles of respiration, then they may look as if they have pneumonia. And if the muscles of the skeleton, the legs, are affected, then they may appear lame or stiff. And at post-mortem, sometimes you can see by eye that some of the muscles appear pale in these areas, which is why it's got the name white muscle disease. In other cases, though, there's not that much to see by eye, and you have to get the tissues looked at under the microscope. You have to do some histopathology to diagnose the problem. And we do that in conjunction with testing the liver for selenium.
So iodine is another important trace element, Heather. Share with us the importance of iodine and what it means if you're short of iodine.
The main role of iodine is in the production of thyroid hormones, and thyroid hormones are there to help control the metabolic rate and thermoregulation in the body. And because of the role in that, the requirements for iodine tend to be higher in the winter. Most of the iodine in the diet is taken up by the thyroid gland in the neck. And in adult sheep, that thyroid gland acts as a store of iodine, which means that if they go through periods where the diet is deficient in iodine, that the adult ewes are absolutely fine. You don't see any signs of a problem. The story is a little bit different for the unborn lamb. And in the last two-thirds of pregnancy, that unborn lamb needs a steady supply of dietary iodine from the ewe crossing the placenta to it. And in the most extreme cases, if the unborn lamb is deficient in iodine, then they can be born with a condition called goiter, when the thyroid gland in the neck becomes enlarged, and they can be born and you can actually see a sort of swelling, a lump, two lumps in their necks. They might be poorly wooled, these lambs as well, which means that they are very prone to hypothermia, and they might just be stillborn also. There is a little bit of evidence to suggest that an iodine deficiency round about tupping time will have an impact on scanning percentage, and in particular smaller numbers of twins being born. The other interesting thing about iodine is that for the production of the thyroid hormones, in order to activate the thyroid hormone to the active form, you also need to have an adequate supply of selenium. So the two are linked together. If they're selenium deficient as well, then the problems can be worse.
Thanks, Heather. So copper is an interesting one, isn't it? Because I remember being warned off as a student feeding horse food in a pasture where there are sheep because of toxicity. Hmm. So tell me a little bit about copper with sheep.
Yeah, I've not mentioned copper very much with regards to ill thrift and poor growth rates in lambs, and that's just because we tend not to diagnose it very much in the area that I'm in, but that can be different in other areas of the country. And copper is quite a complicated one in that there are other things in the diet that can interfere with copper absorption. The ones that are most well known being molybdenum, sulfur and iron. So if there are high levels of those in the diet, then that increases the risk of copper deficiency. The most common issue we see with copper, and we don't diagnose it all that often, and that's probably because flocks in areas where it's an issue are already aware and already supplementing their ewes with copper during pregnancy so that they don't get cases of swayback in the lambs at birth. Swayback happens because copper is required for the correct development of parts of the nervous system, in particular in the brain and the spinal cord, and lambs that are deficient in copper, they don't have enough myelin in these areas and they can struggle to stand from birth, or in some cases they may be okay at birth and you get what's called delayed swayback between the ages of 2 and 4 months of age. Swayback in neonatal lambs can be diagnosed. You might blood sample the ewes, get very low blood copper results there. The lamb livers or blood samples might be very low, and you can get the brain and spinal cord looked at under the microscope. One thing to watch out for, though, is if the ewes have been supplemented with concentrated feeds in the latter parts of pregnancy, then actually their blood results and even sometimes the lamb liver copper results can increase up to a more normal level, which makes diagnosis a bit more challenging. But the flip side of copper actually is in some years, we will diagnose toxicity more often than we will diagnose deficiency. And copper toxicity in sheep can be quite dramatic. I've mentioned already that the liver acts as a store of copper, and it can accumulate copper over weeks to months, but it will eventually reach a point of capacity, and at that point you get damage to the liver cells. Copper is released into the bloodstream and it damages the red blood cells that carry oxygen around the body to the tissues, and what you get then is called a hemolytic anemia, and these sheep may be found dead, or they may be found looking very, very sick. Indeed, they are jaundiced. So if you look at the white of the eyeball, then that can look quite yellow. If you see them urinating, you might spot that they are passing what's described as red wine urine because of its dark red colour. And at post-mortem, the whole carcass can have a yellow or a brownish appearance. The liver is all often very orange. The kidneys can look black. Animals that have less severe liver damage, they may develop photosensitization as a result. So you might get swelling and then crusting of their faces and their ears. There's a whole range of risk factors for copper toxicity. Breed, the breeds vary tremendously in their ability to absorb copper. Breeds that have originated in countries or regions and areas where the forage is low in copper have tended to become very, very efficient at absorbing it from the diet. The classic is the North Ronaldsay sheep, which is subsisting on seaweed. But if we look at our diagnoses of copper toxicity, although there's a wide range of breeds represented, round about a half of them will be Texel Beltex types and their crosses, and a significant number will be Leicesters as well. So those are particularly at risk of copper toxicity because they're good at absorbing copper from the diet. And if these breeds are housed for long periods of time on concentrate feed, they can actually develop copper toxicity, even though if you were to measure the level of copper in their diet, it's at a suitable level for sheep. So it's something to be aware of. Other issues that come about is the accidental feeding of cattle cake to sheep. And cases you'll often find that at times of year where the sheep are stressed, often say roundabout lambing, when they're sucking lambs in the first few weeks when milk production is high, you will sometimes see problems with copper toxicity then if the liver has been copper loaded. With any trace element, the other thing to watch out for really is multiple sources of copper or iodine. So if they've had a bolus and they're on mineralised feed and there's a lick bucket out, then the chances are high that you might be supplying one or more of these trace elements in excess. And while for some, like cobalt, that's not an issue, not necessarily an issue, for others, particularly copper, it can cause a problem in the long term.
That's fascinating, Heather, particularly about the breeds and all the things to consider in managing the sheep. Do you have any top tips for a young vet coming onto a farm or a farmer who is looking at testing for trace elements?
There's a couple of things to be aware of. If you are looking at cobalt, then, and you've recently changed the diet, for example, if you've got a group of lambs that aren't growing well, you ask the vet to come and blood sample them, but in the 2 or 3 days in between that phone call and the samples being collected, you start giving them concentrate feed, then the blood results will reflect that change in diet. And it may be that they have been deficient, but because you've changed the diet, that the blood results actually look okay. There's less of an issue with selenium. The GSHPX that is measured within the red blood cell, because the red blood cells are present in the body after being produced in the bone marrow for weeks to a month or two, then that result will reflect selenium intakes over a longer term. And with regards to iodine, any iodine result will only reflect the iodine intakes of that animal in the 2 or 3 days before the blood sample was collected. I think we've already sort of mentioned the difficulty of copper. It's a bit like having a big tank of diesel with a tap at the bottom. You can turn on the tap and that tells you that there's something in it, but it doesn't tell you if that tank is filled to the top or almost empty. And while there's a good store of copper in the liver, the blood results will be within the reference range until the store of copper in the liver gets much lower.
While we're on the subject of obviously treatment and for trace elements, what things can go wrong, Heather? Because as a veterinary investigation officer, I'm sure you see various things that have gone wrong. So just talk us through that.
We do. And one of the things that we see several times every year are dosing gun injuries. So it's worth just taking that little bit of extra time to make sure that the sheep is well restrained and in the correct position, and you shouldn't ever be having to be administering boluses with any force, for example. But it all can be difficult, obviously, because animals aren't always as cooperative as you'd like them to be. But we do see problems where the dosing gun, the end of the dosing gun, has actually penetrated through the tissues at the back of the mouth, and what happens is that sets up an infection there, an abscess forms, and it can actually eat its way through blood vessels. And these animals, you sometimes find them dead, and that's because they have bled to death. You don't necessarily see any blood or a lot of blood because they will usually swallow it and it's actually in the rumen at post-mortem. You might see them alive and looking ill. Sometimes they have a swelling under their lower jaw, and that can make them look as if perhaps they've got liver fluke, for example. And usually these cases come to light between 1 and 2 weeks after the sheep have been handled and drenched or given a bolus. There are often multiple animals affected, and unfortunately they're not really treatable. The other problem that we do see is in 6 to 8 week old lambs. And in that age group of lamb at that time of year, they're often handled for multiple management tasks at the same time. For example, they may have had a wormer drench, a vaccination, they may have been tagged, they may have been given a pour on, or a whole range of treatments in addition to mineral drench. And what people report is within 10 or 15 minutes, they will see some lambs that are struggling to breathe. They might be coughing. Some may die within the first hour and over the next 48 hours. And in these cases, then what's happening is they have actually inhaled the mineral drench into their lungs instead of swallowing it. So the chemical damages the lungs, and that makes it difficult for them to breathe. So again, just be aware of how these animals are being restrained. And although it's obviously a lot to do to them, and everyone's probably in a rush to get through them, just taking that little bit of extra time might help prevent some unnecessary losses.
So some really important key messages in terms of managing the flock and the sheep health and welfare. Thank you for your time, Heather. As always, great to talk to you. And thank you to our listeners for listening. We'll put any links or anything of interest on the notes to accompany this podcast, and look out for future podcasts. As always, I say, you know, please subscribe to our On the Hoof podcasts, and you can listen on various platforms. So it remains for me to say thank you, Heather, and we'll hopefully speak soon.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.